Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Sharkcast Radio, a weekly podcast on all things Cronulla Sharks, brought to you by the legends of Dyson Logistics, Jason Hawes at Cripps and Cripps Real Estate, and coming at you live and loud from the Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking. Well, we're not coming from the Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking this week, Samuel. We're actually looking at the Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking on the other side of the bay. We're going to fire up the DeLorean this week, Sam. We're going to go back to 1988, and we're sitting here with the great John Docco. How are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm here amongst greatness, and Jonathan's here as well, which is fantastic.
And he's razzing us by being monosyllabic.
He'll start talking when we get into the 88 era. I'm good. It's really great to be here. We're all relatively healthy, I think, which is great. A bonus. Yeah, looking forward to getting into
Can we just mention what we just saw as we pulled up to Jonathan's house?
Yes.
We're all in the COVID lockdown.
Oh, boy. Are we allowed to talk about this?
Can we talk about this? Old mate across the street. So there's a... Well, I don't know if it was an ambulance, but some kind of vehicle wheeling... an old chap, your across the road neighbour, and he's been in hospital with the COVID.
Yeah, our old neighbour across the road. He was one of the first to get hit by COVID, and we just watched him come home. So he's been in hospital probably over 6 weeks. So good to see him home.
Yeah, that's a positive story. Now,
we didn't think he'd make it.
He's, well, exactly right.
And that's
any recovery is a positive story.
Indeed, 79 years old.
79 years old. Yeah. Now, as part of our ongoing series, when we don't have any football to talk about, we're firing up the DeLorean, Samuel, and we're going back to eras, and we discuss specific eras. We had a very good chat about 2008, and we're going to fire the DeLorean up and go 20 years prior to that and talk about 1988. Hence, we've got the great Docco with us. What do you remember about 1988 outside of football, John?
Yeah, well, 88's a long time ago, obviously. Memories are not that good anymore, but I think I was a school teacher back then. So, like most guys in the day, you know, we all worked. So footy was like our passion. We loved it, and you know, we had a job. Most of the guys were working, especially in trades and that sort of thing. But
so, talk me through that. You trained how many times? You got to work a full 40-hour week.
Yep.
And you train twice a week, Tuesday, Thursday.
Tuesday, Thursday, and games are mostly Sunday, so Saturday morning we'd have a run, you know, just before, you know, to run through, light run on the day before, yeah.
And was there ever this, you know, trouble with employers? You know, if you're a first grade footballer, did your employer know that that was the priority? Did you ever run into trouble with that or any of the other boys?
Oh, I didn't really, but the guys who did physical jobs, you know, there were a lot of guys who were builders and, you know, working in trades, so they'd either, you know, quite a few work for themselves or they had bosses who had to be, you know, tolerant of the situation, especially Monday mornings.
Yeah, 100%, right. So I ask you about 1988. What do you remember, Samuel?
Finishing primary, I believe, and I remember the music of 88. I think we were coming off Springsteen's Tunnel of Love, a great departure from Born in the USA. I remember a lot of novelty number one hits, like Slice of Heaven. Oh, that was 86, wasn't it? And I remember a pretty red-hot Cronulla Sharks team, which I was lucky enough to beat a lot of their home games for and the away games. There was a bicentenary year as well.
Yeah, that was the big news of the year, the bicentenary, the celebration of the nation. 200 years of white colonial rule in Australia. Different times, probably wouldn't be celebrated in the same way, but it was a big deal back
Huge.
In the day. I remember...
Yeah.
You know, tall ships coming in and special coins being minted and all that stuff. I've also got some other cultural touchstones from 1988, which you may remember. The Seven Network launched television soap Home and Away.
Oh, yeah.
In 1988, Docco. The big TV event of the year, Scott and Charlene's wedding.
Yes.
On Neighbours. Tell me about your memories of that. Did you watch it?
I don't think I've... Probably watched an episode of Neighbours, no.
Okay.
No, me either.
Newman, 88. Are we talking Expo?
World Expo 88. That's here. It's number
It's
number 10 on this list. Other cultural touchstones. Triple J has their first ever Hottest 100, but then it was known as the Hot 100.
Yeah, right.
and it was the Hot 100 songs of all time.
A lot of Violent Femmes, probably.
Yeah, Joy Division's Love Will Tear Us Apart took home the gong. The top song in terms of time at number one on the ARIA charts was Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes's I've Had the Time of My Life.
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing. Nintendo launched the Game Boy. And anything else worth talking about, that was about it. World Expo 88 up in Brisbane. Cost $600 million.
I'd have to throw in that the music was We Became Good Friends of Dave from the Hoodoo Gurus around that time.
Yes, the Mighty Gurus.
The music scene, I know you guys are right in the music scene, but around that time and before that, the music scene in this area was just amazing. You know, you had Cronulla Workers Club, you had Carringbar Pub, Sylvania Pub, you had Miranda Pub, like every place had bands, and you know, we used to love going to see the bands.
Did you know, Jocko, that I had Dave Faulkner lined up to be on our podcast? The Sharks won the grand final. Old mate Newman turned him off by talking about guitar pedals at the after party. Guitar pedals.
We got a premiership out of it.
We did.
Well, we're hoping one day Dave did write a Shark song. And,
yes.
Which you played for us.
Yes, and on that night, I think, yes. Yeah. And still trying to get him to bring that out of the mothballs, but you never know. Another good band at the time, the Radiators. They were
the Rads.
Jeff Turner, the bass player, Mad Shark supported too. And
is that right?
The Radiators and the Hoodoos put on a free show. Well, not free to the punter, free for us. We, 1988, we went to Hawaii, the end of season trip, and the Radiators and Hoodoos put on a show at the Leeds Club free for us. All the punters had to pay, but that helped us to get to Hawaii. So,
that funded your trip?
It did, yeah.
Wild times.
That's cool.
Well, Cronulla, we've always been a bit struggling, so our trip normally was the Gold Coast, was sort of, the extent of our trips in the past, so that was, that was great at the time.
I'm going to say that you thoroughly deserved it that year, Docco.
Well,
yes and no.
We'll see. So if we frame the football on the season 87, it was a sprightly year, won a few games out of the gate, but then faded badly and just missed the finals. And then I believe there was a change of coach in 88, is that right, Docco?
Mm-hmm.
Gibbo left and then Fitzgibbon came in?
Yeah, we had Jack. I think Jack came in, 85?
Correct.
And at the time, you know, Jack was the guru and the most revered coach of all time, I think. So it was great to be there when he came. And I remember at the time at team meetings, you know, we didn't know whether to laugh sometimes at how Jack spoke. Sometimes he would speak and I would think it was funny, but Jack maybe didn't mean it to be funny. And other times he was trying to be funny. And so we didn't really know. We had to look at guys like Gav Miller and Dane Sorensen, the older boys, to know whether, you know, if they laughed, we'd sort of follow through because you didn't want to laugh if Jack wasn't trying to be funny at times.
So, Docco, I've got a few bits of information here. Jack Gibson, as you said, much revered, super coach, thoroughly successful. I've got him missing two finals series in his entire career before he came to the Sharks. That was when he was at Souths. So he's won five or six premierships. Comes to Cronulla for three seasons, and you guys don't make the finals in any of them. Is there a reason now looking back, was there an injury crisis? Was it different style of playing? Like what? Why didn't it work with Gibson?
Oh, I think Jack came probably as, living in the area from where we are. Jack only lived down, you know, South Cronulla. And I think Jack did that at the end of his career to try and help Cronulla. He always had a soft spot for Cronulla. He inherited a team that had been decimated, like, you know, there was a half pay saga at Cronulla when the club was in financial difficulties, which it seems to be a lot. So a lot of the old heads had sort of left the club. So it was left up to, a whole new group of, especially younger players. And I think there was the club signed about 10 local juniors at the time on very, you know, small contracts. But, and a lot of guys probably saw first grade than what they, earlier than they would have, only that through necessity.
So you fast forward to 88, the year we're going to talk about. Alan Fitzgibbon comes in as coach, and some of those local juniors, yourself, Barry Russell, McGaw, Eddinghausen, have seen a bit more first grade, show a lot of promise, and it's a pretty good year.
Yeah. We've got a chance. And a lot of the time, I think, you know, sometimes doesn't matter what play, you know, if a club can lose players, but there's always someone there to take their spot. And it opened up, as I said, with a lot of players leaving, it did open the chance for a lot of the younger and a lot of guys that, you know, we played against each other, you know, guys who played for Cronulla, Caringbah, you know, like Barry Russell, Mick Porter, Weaponhead, you know, out at Ingerdoon. You know, there was a few Dealer guys with, you know, E.T. and Stewie Raper, Wow Wilson. So, as I said, it gives those guys a chance, and I think we, you know, we sort of took our chance.
So Sam's going to run us through some of the sort of landmark games that happened that year.
Yeah, so we start the year. Do you remember how you started the season?
No.
You don't.
We've got to preface this. We've got to be fair. Jonathan said he did, before we hit record, he said he remembers very little from the time. So we've got to jog the memory.
I know we'll get to the end, but I remember the end and that wasn't a good ending. But yeah, let's go start.
Spoiler. So much like the 2020 Sharks, 0-2. You start the season 0-2. You lose to Souths and Canterbury. Close games. And you actually won only one of your opening five matches, with a draw in there. And then we get to round six and you win four in a row, big wins against Illawarra, St. George, Brisbane and Penrith. Now, I wanted to grill you about a round eight game, 38-8 against the Broncos, a win. Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. in April, ABC TV. I was there, Doco, as a young fella, a very young fella. First time Brisbane had come to Cronulla in the comp for the first time.
What were Brisbane... were they touted as like having this big advantage because they were like a one-team city when they? Because I mean, 88 was the year that Brisbane, Newcastle, and the Gold Coast came in. Was there that feeling around the game that they would have a big advantage over other clubs?
Oh, it probably was because I mean, you know, at the time it was basically Brisbane was the state of origin team more or less. Probably at that time there was probably a lot of Brisbane players though playing elsewhere because they were contracted, you know, to other clubs, and it was probably in the following years probably more so where all the players would want to stay there, obviously, because they're playing at home. So
some of the players in that team: Chris Johns, Gene Miles, Michael Hancock, Wally Lewis, Alan Langer, Greg Dowling, Kinescu.
That's the state of origin team, Samuel.
Terry Madison. That's what came to Cronulla that day, right? And so yep.
And we spanked them.
We did. It was it was like 18-0 after 18 minutes or something. Really early start, dominating. But I remember it being a turning point. For me as a fan, I couldn't believe it. But also, they started talking about, oh, this could be the year, which happens every year for the Sharkies, of course. But do you have any memories of that game? Because it was, as a fan, it was remarkable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, everyone's pumped, you know, to play, you know, against that team. You mentioned those players. I mean, they're a lot of the legends of the game. So I think any player wants to lift when they're playing against the best. So, I do remember it was a nice day. I think it was a very nice sunny day. So, I mean, it used to be nice, you know, playing in good weather. And, I don't remember too much of the game. I think I might have scored a try, but that's probably about it.
You scored two.
Yeah, well, there you go.
You're so humble. Come on, talk it up a bit.
I
was great that day.
It was a big win, Newman, for the club.
Yeah,
big win.
Of course.
Historically.
Yeah. There's some games you remember. I mean, you know, when you think of memories, I remember there was one game probably about 1985 or something like that. We beat Canterbury, you know, who were the gun team at the time. We beat them at Belmore Oval, and we were no chance of winning a game like that. And probably of all the games I played, that's probably one I remember. And I remember John O'Connor, who was halfback for us at the time, Jock, in the interview after the game, let out the F word on live to radio. He was so excited that we'd beaten them because we were not expected to win. So things like that is what I remember at the time. So, I mean, 88, yeah, I remember that. I do remember that game, but you know, not a great deal.
So we like every year, we went to Brookvale and we lost.
I don't think I ever won a game at Brookvale.
Can you add to that what the mystique around Brookvale? Because that's a hoodoo that remains to this day.
It's probably
why is
very
it such a prick of a place to play.
Well, I think most teams felt the same way about coming to our place. Mm. You know, the facilities are in those days were quite primitive compared to some other grounds. You go out to Brookie and you know it was the same. So, I think teams felt the same way coming to Shark Park as they did going to Brookie. And for us, I don't know, it's that whole trip of driving through, you know, from southern, the south side to the north side is a shit of a trip through the traffic and all the rest. And it's one of those baggy teams. I don't know. It's hard to explain why. I grew up hating Manly, having been to the 73 and 78 grand final in the replay. So I was, you know, with St. George, they're the two pet hate teams. And it's just funny that, you know, they were such a bogey team.
You don't lose a game until – you don't lose another game in the regular season. So that's 12 matches with another draw thrown in there. That's a pretty good streak.
12 unbeaten.
Yeah. And I think we played St. George the last game to win the minor premiership.
Oh, we'll get to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he remembers that.
I'm there now. I do remember that. But I do remember Gavin Miller once saying later that unlike now where the sort of teams do a sort of lap of honour or they go and greet the fans after every game, in those days that wasn't the case. And we actually did a lap. I do remember that very well. We did a lap of the ground after winning
too.
That game.
Yeah.
And Gav said that that was like a bad omen that we did that.
It was.
You know, it was like we peaked and we left it there to a point. Easy in hindsight to say those sort of things.
Was that a record crowd that game?
I'd
playing St George last round for the minor premiership. That would have been
it was a big
crowd. Day out in the Shire.
It might have been the days too when the crowds were the real crowd, and sometimes in Super League days there were crowds that you wonder where all the people were. But
we're going to touch on that game later, boys.
All right, keep us on track, Samuel.
Origin comes around. Doco, game one.
Hey.
How'd you go?
Not very well. Well, I always show that on TV. I do know that one, but I always show Alfie Langer kicking a ball and running around me and all that, so a lot of people remind me of that one. I think I was part of the record number of players that got dropped in
you
the
did,
game.
Yeah.
I was lucky. I got to go in LA in the game over there end of the previous season. You know, Gary Jack was out, who was a great player. And I think he was injured at the time as well, but who gives a? I got to go. And it was just unfortunate, that game. I don't know, the preparation, when I think back, Johnny Peard, who's a great Blake Peardy, I don't know, well, look at our preparation now. And the preparation in those days was like going to the pub and having some drinks, and it was just like a bonding thing. And Queensland did the same. I mean, they probably more so. When I look back now, I just don't think preparation was great and all the rest of it, but, you know, that's an excuse.
So you and McGorah and ET played all three games. But that's three of our back line who, you know, reached some pretty high honours that year.
Back then, did you miss a club game for Origin, or was it just play and then back up?
I remember we went to LA, you missed a game, because that was still during the season when that game was on. Now you could back up. Yeah, we could back up. So if you're right to play, you played. Because I also, City Country was big in those times too, so often you'd play City Country on the Saturday and play your club game on the Sunday. And sometimes you'd have a midweek game as well. So, I mean, when they're talking about...
too much footy.
You know, the amount of footy the guys play these days, well, sometimes, you know, we'd play, you know, three games in a week or whatever, so...
Yeah. And when you went on the 12 undefeated streak, when the Sharkies did it in 2016, did you reminisce about your time in 1988 winning all those games? Did it ring any bells? Was it familiar?
Oh, indeed. And I remember in 2016 when Flano, before the semi-final down in Canberra, invited a few old players, you know, to just sit with the players. You know, they had lunch before they got the bus down to Canberra. And Barry Russell made one of the most impassionate speeches I've ever heard, and I still get tingles thinking about it, you know. And he just said, like, we had that chance, you know, so many years before, and we let it go. And he says, every day you think about it. And he said, don't you guys, you're sitting here now, you've got the chance, don't let it slip. And that game, we were there to be beaten on that Canberra game. I went down, I took my son down, we drove down, and we were there to be beaten. We were gone. And
no Gow, Wade Graham out.
Yeah, Gow, yeah. And I rang Barry after the game. I said, mate, I don't care if 1% of what you said carried, but to me it did. And, you know, it was just amazing. So, yeah, I mean, we had a good run, and you sort of remember that. But as we know, those runs mean nothing if, you know, you falter at the end.
So as you hinted at, we played the Dragons in the last regular season round. Now, coming into that game, Sharkies and Bulldogs on the same amount of points, going for the minor premiership. Cronulla have never won the minor premiership, Adam. the Bulldogs play Souths, who were, I think, coming 7th or 8th. We're playing the Dragons, who are coming 5th. So back in those days, Adam, a lot of games were played at the same time.
Yeah, and this is one of my favourite memories of rugby league, right? A lot of games being played at the same time, and then you'd be at the game, and then it'd go up around the ground. You know,
or some old guy had the transistor going.
Yeah, West's a 14, Manly 10, and everyone would cheer. You know, I used to love that. That's just something that's sort of been lost to time. But yeah, that was the way it went back then.
So Souths beat the higher-ranked Bulldogs 18-14. So it was there for us. Basically, we just couldn't lose by a certain amount of points at that point. We didn't know that. I think the game was on at the same time. Unfortunately, we're losing most of the game to the Dragons. But Sean Watson, who in my memory was a winger...
Hang on. Is it Sean Watson or Sean Watson?
Always Sean. We always called him Sean, yeah.
Sean Watson.
What does his mother and father call him?
Sean.
Yeah?
Yep.
I had forgotten that one. Good one.
A few stories about Sean.
You're keeping me around for... There's got to be a reason, right?
I feel like I'm like not really a fan now or something.
It's a long time ago.
Someone's furiously twittering, it's Sean Watson.
That's right.
Tweeting.
So Sean comes off the bench, which I'd forgotten about, because he was a pretty big fella.
Very much so.
And he scores 2 tries. Sharkies, around the 73rd minute, win, go ahead. We win the minor premiership, Adam.
Yep.
First time ever.
And they do a victory.
The lap of honour, which I remember. I remember I was there with my brother David.
Now, there's actually footage of this game on YouTube.
Yeah.
And a lot of the action... The tries are scored in the Beer Hill corner.
Okay.
And I got no memory of this. I was only 8 years old, so I can't remember. But I got to say, that would have been an amazing day out as a fan. The Sharks playing the Dragons for a potential spot for the minor premiership Sunday afternoon at home.
Yeah, keep the streak going. It was our year.
Doesn't get much bigger than that.
No.
We also called... Beer Hill was Varney Hill, obviously, because the setting sun all the time. We had a lot of mates who used to be there, and I had quite a few. Varney Hill, as in the sunglasses.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the Varney, French Oakley-style sunglasses.
They used to be the trendy ones, and a lot of those guys were rugby players. They'd play the...
Barony,
They'd play, Southern Districts on the Saturday, so they'd all be there.
Cannon on.
And they'd always used to like to try and get us to react to their comments. So that was always... Yes. A lot of memories about that, yes.
Yeah. So, good win.
I remember I made my mum take me up to, I believe it was the State Bank at the time, and I bought... Why it was there, I don't know, but I bought the Minor Premiers T-shirt, which I've still got. Doesn't fit me, but I've still got it.
You've got it.
You might
have
fit
brought
you.
It. Yeah. Yeah, wow. All right, well, why don't we just cut to a break after that and we can talk about the semis afterwards. This is Sharkcast Radio.
Sharkcast Radio would not be possible without the generous support of Dyson Logistics.
Dyson Logistics provides tailored logistical solutions to meet individual client needs and is set apart by its personalized service.
Dyson has a strong worldwide agent network, enabling highly competitive rates. Find them online at www.dysonlogistics.com or call them 83991844.
Dyson Logistics, service delivered.
Blindside, here's Priestley. Docking's there as well. Docking's in a hole. Docking's over the quarter line. Docking caught from behind, but he's there. Yes, say a cry. Jonathan Docking.
Buying or selling a property is one of the most stressful undertakings that you can do in your entire life. Luckily, Sharkcast Radio is supported by one of the best and most honest real estate agents in the Sutherland Shire market and is an expert in the North Caringbah region. I sold my property with Jason Hawes from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate and could not have been happier with the outcome. Call Jason on 0410-417-450. That's Jason from Cripps & Cripps Real Estate, 0410-417-450. Welcome back to the show. We fired up the DeLorean in our look back series and we're heading back to 1988 and we're joined by Jonathan Docking, dashing, flying fullback in the headgear. And we've gone through the regular season and we go to the 1988 final series. Sharks end up in minor premiers and under that system top 5, correct me if I'm wrong, Doco, you get 2 shots.
We had 2 shots and that was a massive advantage being minor premiers. You know, you got 2 chances and as we discussed, we had a great run and you think having a good run through that year leading into the finals, that you'd be in a good place to at least win one of those games. But, yeah, things didn't go our way. Barry Russell got injured a couple of weeks out from the finals, and I think that probably hurt us.
Right, so Barry Russell was injured in the game prior to the St. George game. He fractured his shoulder and he missed the Bulldogs game. So I reviewed Gary Lester's fantastic book, Colour Me Black, White and Blue, and Gav Miller makes some pertinent comments about the Bulldogs game. He said that the coach Al Fitzgibbon and Ron Massey, who was hanging around on the board or something?
Oh, he was like an assistant.
Yeah. They weren't that confident that we had the semi-final experience to match it with a team like the Bulldogs, who'd won in 85-86. They had a lot of semi-final experience. So they concocted a game plan, which was, you know, tuck the ball up the jumper, kick early, don't give the ball any air. And Gav Miller said that they kicked to us, to the Sharks, and there was a bit of space. They started throwing the ball around, got the ball back off a scrum, and then the ball went to Sparkles and he dropped it, and that was it. They had a bludger of a game and lost, and Miller remarked in the book. No. He said Alan Fitzgibbon grabbed him and said, you know, the game plan was play up the middle, don't pass the ball, you pass the ball.
So they're blaming themselves for going against the game plan.
You didn't follow the game plan. Do you remember any of that?
I could never disagree with what Gav says.
You're great, mate, Gav.
He actually rang me yesterday out of the blue, which was nice. But I think that game, as you said, we were probably inexperienced. They were very experienced. The big games, they are different. There's no doubt about it. And I just think we lacked probably one of those big forwards, we got Les Davidson a few years later. If we'd ever had Les, I reckon that could have been a difference. An absolute enforcer like him, he would have just helped guys like Gav, you know, up front, which is probably what I think we probably lacked in hindsight. That's probably what we lacked in that time.
Okay, and then it's a bad game against the Bulldogs, but as you say, you get a second chance, and we roll up against the Tigers, and the Tigers are at their historical peak, you know, the Benny Elias era.
Yeah.
Sirenin, Scott Gale.
Yeah, Roach.
Ellery Hanley. Who will put the nail through it. Do you remember anything about the week or leading up to the game, Doco, after the big loss?
No, not really.
Sorry to jump in. That's the prelim, right?
Yeah.
We win that game, we're in the grand final.
Yeah.
So we've lost a semi. Yeah.
Well, we win that, we're in the grand final. We had two chances to be in the grand final.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it was only five teams in the semis, so it was reduced.
Yep.
Was the game plan different at all?
No, I remember that game. I mean, I've never watched either of them again, but I just remember that was a tough game. That was just a slog. That was a typical, as it was in those days, a slog of a game. It was tough. And, I don't really remember the game plans. I don't think, everyone was obviously determined and, you know, we'd all love to have been that team, you know, that got to the grand final and, got the ultimate prize. But, it just wasn't that day. We just, you know, things just didn't quite go our way. But it, yeah.
And that's what Gav said in the book. Gav said that played much better against the Tigers, but it was a tough game and they probably just shaded the Sharks with experience. Had a couple of chances to score, but I think Sean Watson fumbled the ball over the line. But he just admitted that they were the better side on the day, and that was it.
In the 73rd minute, it was a close game, 3-2 up in the 73rd minute. So they weren't blown off the park.
Yeah, I remember being at that game. Were you there, Samuel?
I was.
It was pretty deflating experience.
I was there with Reno both weeks, actually. So I was scarred from 88 pretty much on as a Sharks man. Redeemed in 2016.
Yep.
But, I mean, this isn't a funeral we're at. I mean, what a great year. One of my favourite years. I was going to say, Doco, we played a little bit flash throughout the year with the likes of Ettinghausen and McGaugh and yourself. When you get to the finals, is that a bit of a disadvantage that you weren't really either allowed to play that way by the coaches or by the opposition? Were you hindered a bit by your attack?
Oh, no, certainly not coaching-wise. Fitzy would... No, that would certainly not the case. But the can't always dictate how a game's going to go. No. I mean, the flow of the game dictates what you can do, and you can have all sorts of game plans, but that doesn't necessarily translate into the game. And that was just one of those tough slog of the games, and there wasn't the open football that you know, that we could have taken advantage of. But no, well, you said it wasn't a funeral. I think it is a funeral for us. That was.
I understand.
You
that.
Always look back on that, and we.
No, I meant this podcast isn't a funeral.
Well, we said the same thing. It was a similar type of story with 2008. I don't know if you listened to that pod, Doco. They didn't finish minor premiers. They were equal minor premiers, and then went out the gate. But the team.
This team was a lot better.
The team in 2008 really punched above their weight. Do you feel, given the team that you had with, you know, some star power in Eddinghausen, McGaw, Miller, it was a lost opportunity?
Oh, no doubt. And you mentioned Gavin. I mean, he says that he'll say that forever. That was a lost opportunity, yeah. And we all feel the same way. It definitely was. And you know, you do. You reflect and you think about it, and you know, you can't change. Unfortunately, it's what it is. And as I mentioned earlier, Barry Russell, you know, his speech, those guys, they got that chance and they took it. And all credit to them and to the coach.
Now, it's worth pointing out that Barry Russell played that game against the Tigers. Barely could
played,
move.
Played, wounded, yeah.
Yeah, barely could move and played. So you're behind the eight ball there. Now, we know Gav a bit. You've introduced us to him and he's a emotional kind of guy. What was he like afterwards?
Oh, I gathered...
I can imagine you would have to give him a wide berth.
You'd... the eyes would spin, like, you know, you'd be very careful crossing Gavin after those sort of things. I'm saying anybody else would be... Yeah, Gav was just passionate. He just wanted to win, and he was so driven to win. And, you know, it's just so disappointing when you know you've got an opportunity and you let it slip. It's simple as that, and nothing you can do about after the game. You know, everyone's in that same boat. You know, once it's gone, it's gone, and yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, an important year in the club. I mean, what you guys did set the foundations for teams later, including 2016. I think it's important we point out to our younger listeners that Barry Russell, I'm sure everyone knows, played for us, but they probably don't know how good he was. They just probably think he's the guy that. Did the salary cap thing or whatever. Barry Russell,
yeah,
champion player, winning awards and, you know.
Chip
he was,
Chase,
he
Maestro.
Was the littlest tiny. Guy you ever saw.
Yeah, he was tiny. I mean, you're not a big guy, Jonathan, but you're a lot bigger than him.
Look, all credit to Barry. And, you know, when he unfortunately took on that role as CEO, that to him, he is the most passionate Sharks guy you'll ever find. And he very wrongly got, you know, some people... You know, criticised him, but the most he would not do anything ever against the club. He just loved the club, and he's so passionate to this day. You know, so love Bazza, and he won the Rothmans that year, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, and that was obviously a big loss to us around the middle. You know, he could make a break from anywhere, sniffing out off the forwards, and not having him, you know, doing that sort of thing, it certainly hurt us.
If he plays, Doco, do we go further?
Oh, so hard to say. If he was fully fit and that, he just opens up a whole new dimension. That's a whole thing that we
if it's
obviously
like 3
lacked.
Points all.
Yeah, you might score that one more try.
You need one try.
Yeah.
And your halfback's not. He went off at half time, so he wasn't on the field.
There you go.
And in those games, I mean, in those days, you played the full 80 minutes. You went off, you didn't come back on.
Yeah.
So that's where guys like Barry could come to the fore at the, you know, especially at the end of the first half and at the death, you know, and... As you said, when 3-2 down, if he's on the field, who knows what could happen? You know, that's the whole thing. And and I'm very to get onto the current day. I'm glad to see the one referee coming back. I love that. I just not a fan of the two referees, and I hope that leads to you know, continuity of play so that the big guys do get tired. Smaller guys, I mean, smaller guys now are probably 100 kilos and 6 foot tall. But smaller guys maybe can get back into the game if the big guys get tighter and the game doesn't have so many stoppages.
Now, a lot of people talk about the 80s being sort of a high watermark for the game. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you still follow the game pretty keenly. Do you think the game was better back then? Or do you think now that it's fully professional and clinical and it's a better game now? Or it's just different?
It is totally different, yeah. I mean, the guys are, you know... probably Jack Gibson, going back to Jack, he was the first one who started to talk about players being athletes. Mm-hmm. And in saying that, the guys like Wayne Pearce, who were not necessarily the most talented, but they were the fittest and they would do everything, you know, to, you know, it was only by being so fit and than anybody else that they could, you know, compete, because they didn't have the natural skill. So I preferred the game back then because it was a lot more flowing. It was a lot more it didn't have the stoppages like now. I get very frustrated watching a game where there's a stoppage every second set of six, there's a stoppage. Like, let the game flow, get the referees out of the game, get the bunker out of the game. As far as I'm concerned, just rule on put downs only. Don't go back trying to find something 12 passes back that somebody might have ran behind somebody else. There's enough officials out there. Just let the referees control the game, move on, and the broadcasters don't replay everything. If the one referee gets it wrong, whatever, move on, you know, and don't nitpick on the game.
Doco, I want to get some short pieces on your thoughts on the following players, and it can be funny, it can be whatever you like, all right? Personal, Michael Porter.
Oh, Weaponhead. I played against Mick. You know, he was I played against him, you know, since I was 6 years old, so I knew Mick and his father, Monty, who was involved with the club. You know, I love Mick. He's now up the North Coast. Spoke to him recently. You would not meet a better bloke, a more down-to-earth, just a mate, you know, just a good bloke.
Your captain, David Hatch.
We called him Harry. You know, he used to be like Harry Butler. He used to like, you know, he always wanted to get out in the wild and do all those sorts of things. So
he's a bally point, isn't he?
He had a place down there, and he sort of lives, I think, up here now. He's sort of around a bit, but he was like, even though he's from the city, he was like one of those country boys.
Yeah, right.
Second ever favourite Sharks player, Alan Wilson.
I used to call Alvin Purple back in the days.
Do you get that reference, Newman?
No.
You don't? You don't watch the Foxtel classic movies?
No.
Okay. Go ahead, Docker.
Well, there were a lot of times that Al was a great mate of mine, and we'd be out after a game, and there was always these girls that were attracted to Al. And they'd still come to me to try and get an in, you know, to Al. And
how did that make you feel?
Well, it was like another former player, E.T., who, like him and Barry Russell after a game, like in those days, it was a lot more social after a game. The guys would go back to the club after a game, have a few beers, you know, with each other, with supporters, whoever, you know, and the other team, you know, that used to be a good thing too. But E.T. used to like have one beer or none and just go home. But a lot of us were single at the time, and we used to encourage him to stay at least for a little while so that if E.T. was there...
You're throwing the good bait in the water, right?
They're exactly right. There would be a lot of young ladies vying for his attention. So all we want to do is try and pick them off.
Jonathan,
what are your memories of playing alongside Michael Speechley?
Oh, he's probably the best defender just about I've ever seen around the, you know, sort of a thing that's gone out of the game, tacking around the ankles. He would take the feet from... Didn't matter whether it was someone who was smaller or someone who's 120 kilos. He just knocked the legs from underneath, and the best defender. And he just came off every game. He just he had scrapes all over his head because he half the time led with his head.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't get a tougher guy, a player than Speech.
And was 88 the infamous Tui's commercial?
It might have been 88. I feel like a Tui's. Yeah,
with Glenn Coleman starring in it.
Yes, I remember they picked Hypes for that. He was a, you know, blonde-haired sort of star of the ad. But I do remember when they filmed it, at the time, you had to be over, I think it was 23 or something like that, to be able to be shown sipping a beer.
Yeah,
so there was only at the time, there was only guys like, there's only a couple of guys that were...
Gavs in it.
Yeah, who were old enough to be able to...
I love that. I love that bit in the ad where he drops the ball and the Gav's like, come on, mate. And you're like... You could imagine him doing that.
Well, Gav was like that. Even at training, if guys dropped the ball, he was always...
I forgot about that.
He used to... Gav used to... The forwards did the hard work, as we all know that, to win games and that. And
So if the backs muffed it up, he wouldn't be
able to. He was not. No. Right. Used to get
cranky. All right. Well, thanks for that. We'll cut to a break and we'll come back and we might just run through the quick news if you don't mind staying with us, Doco. This is Sharkcast Radio. The Royal Motor Yacht Club Port Hacking is a hidden gem of the Shire, situated on the banks of the beautiful Port Hacking, and is the best venue around for lunch, dinner, casual catch-up with friends, or function.
They always show NRL games live on the big screens, and Sunday arvos are superb with live acoustic music in the beer garden while the boats frame the backdrop. And you mean I love acoustic music, you know that?
Yachty's Bistro is open 7 days and nights, serving great food, and if you mention Sharkcast Radio, you get a free...
garlic bread, baby.
The RMYC Port Hacking, Woolaware Road, Woolaware, or check out their Facebook feed to see what's on.
Porter, straight at them.
Welcome back to the show, and now it's time to see what news has washed in across Botany Bay towards the mangrovey shores of PointsBet Stadium, Shark Park in the dark, Ronson Field, Caltex Field, Endeavour Field. What other fields did you have, Doco?
Oh, as always, Shark Park.
Shark Park in the dark. Big news in this just dropped in, Sam. We've got a draw.
We have a draw for two rounds. Round three, we're playing the West Tigers. We are the home team. I'm not sure what that's going to mean. And round four, we're playing the Cowboys, which I believe will be in Queensland somewhere. Saturday, both Saturday games. I haven't got times for yet. One looks like to be a 5:30 game. The other might be a 7:30. But yeah, that's just breaking. So
footy back. So you watch every game, Doggo?
Yep. Now, be missing the footy like everyone, and be good to get back to some bit of normality.
Now, just semi-related, I've been doing some research on a 1967 episode where we talk about the first year of the club. And they played at Southern Oval because Woolaware wasn't ready. Right. And then it was mooted that the club should just play at Cogra. And that was dismissed by everybody. By us, by St George, by the New South Wales Rugby League, by the government, by everybody. Now, you can't do that.
That's interesting. That is interesting. It's topical. Look, the way we're going, we might not play there again. We'll see.
So when they say it's the home team, we could be playing it anywhere.
I didn't look at the draw that closely. I apologise. I'm sure everyone listening probably knows by now. But I'm led to believe Sydney games will be Bankwest and Leichhardt.
That's it.
That was the last thing I heard.
Yeah, right.
It's always changing. But
I mean, it doesn't really matter. It's not like anyone's going to be able to go.
No one can go, no.
Yeah.
So playing West Tigers at Leichhardt, yeah, probably not the same.
As an ex-player, how bizarre would you have found that playing in an empty stadium?
I don't think so, because when you're on the field, you know, a lot of the time that just goes out of the picture. We used to play the midweek comp, and that used to be based out at Leichhardt Oval.
Oh, there'd be no one there for that quite often.
No, and that's right. And there'd be, you know, 500 people, if that, a lot of the games, you know, it was midweek on Wednesday night. So I remember playing those games, and we treated those games as serious, and it didn't make any difference that there wasn't anybody there. I mean, it's been, in those days, that was broadcast.
The National Panasonic Cup.
It had a lot of different names. KB Cup or whatever else it used to be.
AMCO. When we won it.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Wednesday night, the midweek?
Yeah.
Cup?
Yeah.
What do you think about a cup competition? Would it have legs coming back, you know?
I would love to see it, but I don't know what it. I don't know how you'd do it.
Now that Brisbane and New Zealand are in, it doesn't really have a...
Well, they... Again, speculation, but they were talking about having essentially exhibition games for all the extended players in the squads this year, and there'd be like four teams in Sydney, and you'd... So St George, Cronulla and Roosters, the extra guys would form a team, and you play like the Brisbane
Queensland
team. So there'd
be like the Southern Stars or something.
Yeah, and that would be potentially televised. I don't know. I don't think that's going ahead at the moment, just because they're not going to get any game time.
Mm.
So something could... You could make something work, but they're probably not going to... This wouldn't be high on their priority list, I'm sure.
All right, other news. The rumours will not abate, Samuel, that Toby Rudolph has signed with the Warriors.
Yeah, so we've got nothing official on that. We've just got a lot of smoke. What are your boys feeling on letting him go? Would you keep him? He's played two NRL matches. He looks outstanding, but how much do you pay a guy that's played two games?
Well, my view is we're very skinny in the middles, and I'm sure... What do you feel about that, Doco?
Oh, I think... excuse me. I think just the economics is probably going to catch us there. We've got a lot of guys who... from... former management are on back-ended contracts and big contracts, and that takes up a massive chunk of cap. So all these guys that we'd love to keep are just, you know, it's impossible because there isn't the money to go around.
And to verify that, I read in the paper that James Graham doesn't have a contract at St George, and he's a mate of mine. I love him. But one of the reasons why I love him is he's a stand-up guy, kind of guy that you'd want in an organisation. And I sent a message to a couple of people down there, and they just laughed at me and said, we don't have anywhere near the money to sign anybody like that. So purely financial.
I wouldn't be signing James Graham for much money, to be honest, at the
moment. Local?
No, I mean, he's
fully experienced.
He's a champion player, but he's at the end of his career.
Yeah, but sometimes you need a hard head like that.
He's got a hard head.
Yeah. So I'm disappointed to lose Toby.
Well, he hasn't gone yet.
Well,
he might have gone. The Sharks, I'm sure, could counter if he hasn't signed.
Yeah.
I'm sure they want to keep him, as Doco said. It's going to be about the cash, making the cash work.
Well, it continues. The salary cap penalty is going to looms large over us for another year after this, when everybody that was responsible for it is sailed off into the sunset.
Off to Kogra.
And Doco's keeping the microphone well away from his face because he came here
he's unplugged
on the pretense that I'm not going to talk about politics.
Oh, that's Flano down there. Does Flano live down the road? Toby's played two games. Would you throw the checkbook at him or not?
I don't know. When you've obviously been around a lot of young footballers, Doco, what do you say in this environment when there's a young player with a lot of hype around him, they get thrown big money by a battler club? What do you say?
You cannot knock any player now, you know, for taking what they can get. You know.
But does the whole, like, you're going to go over there and struggle thing, does that factor?
They have to come good at some time. At some point, they are due to...
And he might look like a superstar, Doco, over there.
He could, and look, he can go over there, he can earn some good coin maybe, and then come back and somewhere else here or somewhere else. I mean, they've got to take their chance where they can get it. A player, you know, some guys, in the old days, you know, used to do the hard yards. You played third grade, you did your time there, then you played, you know, reserve grade, then you'd get a call-up. Some guys could play third grade, get a run on in second grade, and then come on in first grade.
Third game for the day.
They could have three sort of games in one day, so to speak. So it's not like that now. You know, it's like the younger people, they want everything now, and they want to play first grade now. They don't want to do their time and all that. And
but if you're advising a young bloke who's 20 years old, who's got, you know, an opportunity to stay with a, you know, an established club but not on big money, and they get thrown big money by, say, the Titans or the Warriors, would you ever say to them, look, maybe think about your enjoyment of the game as well as the money, or do you just say chase the money?
Oh, look, if they're talking two, three, four times the money of what you can get where you are, you've got no choice. You've got to take
fair
it.
Point.
And you know, who knows what happens? You know, you get an injury. If you stay loyal, you know, you might get an injury playing for Newtown, and then you're nowhere.
100% right.
So, no, I don't begrudge any player, you know, maybe Val.
What? I'm unplugging my microphone.
Chasing the dream, like, that's diverging, but...
Well, Toby Rudolph has had two very serious, at least two serious knee injuries, so he does fall into that category of getting what he can when he can.
He sort of suits the Warriors' MO too, doesn't he? Kind of a bit flashy, you know what I mean?
Oh, he'd do well over there. He's tough. I am led to believe he doesn't want to leave. He loves the club. The club loves him. So it is just going to be about the cap, and as Doco said, you can't begrudge a guy for making a dollar. We'll wait to see what happens on that one.
All right. Well, that wraps us up for another episode. Before we end, Doco, we just have to talk about, where were you 2016? The grand final.
October 2, specifically.
Tell us about the grand final experience real quick, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, you don't have to be quick. You can take your time.
Oh, no, it was good. Stewie Raper organised a bus, you know, for a lot of the old players and, you know, wives, kids and all the rest. So we had our own little bus go in, Al Wilson and Hypo and, you know, guys like that. And I was in the middle of supporters in the northeastern corner where Melbourne were running towards, who had to score at the end.
Oh.
I was like everyone else, who were people all around. I mean, everyone was Cronulla supporters that day, but in that corner was a lot of the hardcore Shark supporters. I know there were people there who just couldn't watch. And everyone was just screaming no, because we just thought the Sharks curse was going to strike. And when you look at it, because, you know, we were sort of looking sort of from behind, and there were gaps everywhere. I thought it was going to happen, and that would have been a dagger to to all of us, I'm sure.
Yeah, I still don't know how we'll recover. All right, we want to really thank you for joining us. You've been a great supporter of what we do.
Yes.
We've developed a great friendship, the three of us, which we both value. So it took us about 2 years to get you on, though, fair to say.
You can come on regularly now. Tell us what he thinks about the club, how they're travelling.
Opinions on the board.
Admin stuff and everything, yeah.
The only thing I'd say, that probably what's happened in the world, it's probably elevated us somewhat, because all these clubs that earn the mega bucks in the gaming and, you know,
yeah,
are earning no revenue now. So they're sort of brought back to our level, so to speak. So we probably go from being down the bottom of the rung to, well, I think we've jumped up quite a few spots in terms of how we look going forward. So as horrible as everything is for our club, it could certainly sort of mean that we're not as badly placed as what we once were. Because I do believe that the league do want less teams in Sydney. And
yeah,
no matter what is said, we're an easy target. So I think this has sort of helped us. So that's one good that may come out of what's going on at the moment.
Hey, Doco, you're going to throw me out of your house. I'm not going to ask what you think I'm going to ask, but you were once a board member, correct?
I had two little stints.
Would you do it again?
No, it's a...
You shouted at me down the phone.
Well,
it's a thankless task. I mean, I give full credit to anybody who goes on the board, because it's... I was unfortunately there, and you know, when the Asada stuff hit, so that wasn't much fun. It's a tough... You cannot please everybody, yeah. And Cronulla, unfortunately, has always been financially struggling. Even now, even though this development was meant to save us, so to speak, I still don't think we're anywhere near out of the turbulence. Clear Air is still a way off, and I think we've got a long, long way to go. And it's by no means are we, you know, sitting secure, I believe. That's just my belief. I don't really know, but
yeah,
it's just my feeling.
Sure. Okay, so that's a no to ever running again. Because Adam might run and he might be looking for other people.
I rang Jonathan because he wants to come off as measured here. And
he's very measured.
That's within his rights. And asked him if he'd run with me, and he shouted at me, "What are you doing? I don't know, and you shouldn't do it either."
You just said run with you. Maybe he didn't want to run with you.
This is true. But he...
No, I said the similar thing to Sparkles when he ran. And... and he came back, he tried to do it for the exact right reasons. He had ideas and he loves the club and all the rest of it. And I said the same thing. I just said, you know, as a one out, you can't do a thing. And you have to have numbers, and it doesn't matter who you are. If you haven't got numbers on a board, you're just wasting your time. So
yeah, it's a lot of time. It's a lot of time, a lot of energy and stress.
And I give full credit to anybody that puts their hand up, because it's a thankless job. And you know, the guys there now, I just wish them the best, because it's still a lot of hard yards to go.
Well, it's a thankless job, but we would like to thank you for your commitment to the club, as a player, as an administrator, as a bloke, as a supporter.
He's a big supporter.
Yeah, and for having us into your home to pepper you with questions and, you know, sitting out here on the deck with a beer. So thanks very much, and we'll see you next week, hopefully, to talk some footy.
There's footy coming. So the other thing we have to say, Newman, is...
Up the Sharks.
No, people should subscribe. Hit subscribe on your podcast, because you never know when we're going to drop an episode like we did a couple of days ago.
And continue to support our sponsors, Jason Horse, Scripps and Crips Real Estate, the Royal Motor Yacht Club, Port Hacking, and the legends at Dyson Logistics, DysonLogistics.com.
All right. Thanks, Doco.
No, thanks for having me. And I love what you guys do. And, you know, we're all, you know, passionate for the same reason. Sharks!